States v. McDonald. Appellant ready to argue? The government? Appellant may argue.
Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, may it please the court. My name is Captain Steve Dre, and along with Major Julie Borchers, I represent the appellant, Private First Class Cedric McDonald. Wrongdoing must be conscious to be criminal. The Supreme Court reiterated this longstanding principle in Malonis v. United States, but the idea was nothing new. Indeed, the court noted there that federal criminal liability generally does not turn solely on the results of an act without considering the defendant's mental state. That understanding took deep and early root in American soil. The foundation of Malonis is that with few exceptions, statutes must identify mens rea for those elements that separate wrongful from innocent conduct. Where a statute is silent as to a specific mens rea for such elements, it does not mean that none exists. Rather, courts must discern an intent and whether a certain mens rea should apply to those elements that distinguish innocent from wrongful conduct. This court has previously followed this logic and analyzed offenses under Article 92, Article 93, and Article 134. In the instant case, the government charged the appellant with an offense under Article 120B1B. The logic and analysis is the same. Here, the specification alleged that Private First Class McDonald's penetration of DJ's vulva was the bodily harm and the sex act. The element that distinguishes an innocent act from wrongdoing is the non-consent of DJ. As the statute is written, the non-consent of DJ is entirely subjective. And so there is no requirement that a panel consider what an appellant is thinking at the time of the sex act.
But, counsel, doesn't that turn everything exactly backwards on its head? I mean, isn't what the government has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt is that she did not consent? And then is it not also true that, as is always the case with an affirmative defense, that an accused can come and say, well, yes, that happened, but I'm not criminally responsible because I believe that she did consent.
Yes, Your Honor, but
it seems to me that the whole analysis that's been undertaken by the parties in this case is completely misses the actual point, which is that this is a general intent offense. I think we'd all agree that if his penis accidentally slipped into her vagina, that he would not be criminally liable. But the government still has to prove that she didn't consent beyond a reasonable doubt.
Right, Your Honor, but that is the issue, that the consent of DJ, the government could essentially put DJ on the stand and she can say, I did not consent. And so if that is an element of this offense, the only element that could possibly distinguish between wrongful and innocent conduct, the defense is left with being required to disprove an element where this court and the Supreme Court has required that in the government's prima facie case, the general rule is that the government must prove the mens rea of the appellant to establish its case in chief. An affirmative defense is a backwards way of doing it.
But his mens rea only comes, with respect to her consent, only comes into play if he raises it as an affirmative defense. And I don't think Malonis purported to change the longstanding common law, criminal law, with respect to affirmative defenses and how they work.
Yes, Your Honor, but the issue with this is that Malonis and all of the cases on which it is based and this longstanding principle of criminal jurisprudence in this country is that Congress must establish a mens rea for an appellant. And so here, by requiring...
Congress didn't.
Does it have to be for every element?
Or it has to be for every element that would distinguish between wrongful and innocent conduct. And so, like this court analyzed in Haverty, there could be an innocent actor who honestly believes that what he is doing is good. There was somebody who was having a friend drink to excess. Here is it is someone who thinks that he is having sex with someone. In most cases, sex with another individual is licit conduct, which the Supreme Court noted in Staples. There was owning a firearm. When there is a behavior that is far and away legal conduct, it is unthinkable that Congress would then intend to criminalize behavior without considering an accused's mental state. And so an affirmative defense may exist, but the fundamental premise of this argument and these cases is that Congress has to establish the mens rea within the statute. If it, and those few exceptions are when when wrongfulness can be established by the elements themselves. And so in Carter, the Supreme Court noted that general intent is sufficient because the government is required to prove a forceful taking. And so there, that element itself protects innocent actors. It distinguishes between wrongful and...
True or not true, sexual assault or rape are general intent offenses.
Rape is a general intent offense. Here, as charged, this sexual assault offense, I don't think that this court can conclude it's a general intent crime. I think that...
So what does the specific intent go to?
Well, there's no specific intent here.
So if it's not specific intent, if it's not a specific intent offense, what kind of offense is it?
Right. So...
Are you saying that he had to specifically intend that she not be consenting?
I'm not saying that he specifically intended that she be not be consenting, but if this court analyzes this under a rubric of general intent, then the element and where the element that distinguishes between wrongful and innocent conduct is consent, then a general intent reading of this also requires that an accused knew that she's not consenting. And that I'm not asking this court to do. I don't think that is the reason.
She knows she's not consenting.
That he knew she was not consenting.
Oh, that's not all you said. Okay, go ahead.
So, go ahead.
Where are we here? The CCA said, we don't have to decide this because his conduct was under any standard reckless. So we don't have to decide whether it's general intent or reckless or what have you. Because it was reckless, sneaking up behind somebody and honking her without warning after you've hid in the room is reckless. That seems to be what CCA is saying here. So why do we have to decide what the intent is? Is there an advisory opinion lurking here?
No, I don't think there's an advisory opinion, any more so than this court's treatment of Haverty and Gifford and Tucker were. I think, so first, yes, the Court of Criminal Appeals essentially dismissed this argument with a hand wave and said they don't think it's an issue here. And then they analyzed it under a reckless standard and said, well, this person is guilty regardless. But they did not have the authority to do that. At the Court of Criminal Appeals.
Why don't they have the authority to do that? They got a lot more authority than we do.
Fair. So at the Court of Criminal Appeals level, they are reviewing what the panel did and the instructions that the panel.
No, they're reviewing what the judge did, or at least that's the form it comes up here. The question is, did the judge err? There are two answers. The judge erred or the judge didn't err.
So the appellant, though, had a right to have the panel be properly instructed with a sufficient mens rea. And so here, where they were not, for the ACCA to then determine that regardless of whatever legal theory may have applied, they found his conduct to be reckless, completely skips over the appellant's constitutional right to be convicted with proper instructions at trial. And so, especially since the Army Court and the criminal courts frequently...
Courts do that all the time. Courts don't have to answer the narrow question presented if they can go beyond it and say, whether or not we answer the narrow question, it matters not because he did something else. He was reckless. He reached the next step up. End of story. Courts do that all the time. Are you suggesting that's somehow improper?
Under this circumstance, yes, Your Honor. The appellant was entitled to have a jury that was properly instructed as to the burden that it was required to find the evidence to convict him. Here, where the panel did not receive a proper instruction, it could convict him when the panel may very well have thought that his conduct was misguided, but not reckless. And so for the ACCA then to step in, where usually it says it didn't get to see and hear the witnesses, where here it actually uses that as a sword against the appellant and says, well, we find that DJ was credible and Thomas wasn't, so it doesn't matter, it was all reckless. But it was the panel's prerogative to determine who to believe.
Well, and it's CCA's prerogative under Article 66. If you got a complaint about that, go complain to Congress.
But so that's go ahead.
Sorry. So let's move back a little bit. You seem to be jumping to the issue of what this court should discern should be the proper mens rea. But in Alonis, the court specifically said that lower courts, they need to first look at whether Congress expressly stated a mens rea,
yes,
or secondly, implied a
yes,
certain mens rea. And if a certain mens rea is implied, we're obligated to follow that. So let's focus on this issue of, did Congress imply a specific mens rea? Number one, it's a situation where the two other sexual offenses in 120, they have a mens rea spelled out, correct?
Yes, sir.
So wouldn't that cause us to conclude that Congress indeed was focusing on this fact that the offenses within 120 needed to have a specific mens rea attached to them? And then when we look at the historical nature of sexual assault by bodily harm, there was general intent, correct?
Yes, Your Honor.
So why shouldn't we then conclude that based on that, that what Congress was implying is there is, we are cognizant of the fact that there needs to be a mens rea here. The prior mens rea was general intent, and that's what we are sticking with. And so why shouldn't that be the end of our analysis?
But Jill, the development of a sex assault by a bodily harm, where a bodily harm is simply defined as a non-consensual touching, is new. That is a new concept. For decades, any sex assault against an adult required force. And so that element distinguishes innocent from wrongful conduct. In 2006, Congress changed it and made this a potential theory of liability to convict an accused of a sex assault offense. And so there's no historical precedent or ancient usage on which this court can divine what Congress meant when it passed the statute. And so,
well, in terms of general intent, though, with Article 120B1B, doesn't it share the same language and definitions as assault consummated by a battery, which is a general intent crime?
So when
we look at that and say, once again, it's our responsibility, we look at expressly from the Supreme, from the Congress, next is implied, why shouldn't we point to that and say, it's implied here that general intent is the proper mens rea?
Well, this court has established that an assault consummated by a battery includes a forceful touching of another. And so that forceful word, much like it served the Supreme Court's analysis of this issue in Carter to properly distinguish innocent from wrongful conduct, protected innocent actors. But here where this statute is entirely based on the subjective understanding of DJ, where there is no requirement that a fact finder attempt to determine what the accused was thinking at the time of the act. Again,
but isn't there a defense out there for any accused? That defense defendant can, the accused can say, I personally and reasonably had a mistake of fact.
Yes, sir, absolutely. And that is the crux of this issue. Congress, Alonis, and the cases on which it stands require that Congress establish a general, that Congress establish the mens rea with respect to those elements that distinguish wrongful from innocent conduct. Here, Congress doesn't have anything to do with affirmative defenses. The president does. The president writes 916, and he's the one who establishes those. And so to allow Congress, or to allow this statute to be read as dispensing with mens rea, completely neglects those line of cases.
It's not completely dispensing with mens rea, right? I mean, if the example that I gave, that he somehow accidentally, physically, his penis entered her vagina, which we've had people, we've had cases here where they said that's how that happened, right? That would be not an offense because it was an accident.
Fair, Your Honor, but that is one example of one innocent actor who's protected by that analysis. But there's
all I'm suggesting is that your suggestion that there is no mens rea, if we don't read in the mens rea that you want to the consent aspect, is just not correct.
Okay, I disagree with that conclusion based on that particular line of facts, Your Honor. That perhaps, and I see that my time is up, Your Honor.
Please answer the question.
I may briefly continue. I'm actually, under a reading of the statute, I actually dispute that that person would per se be not in violation of the statute. Courts may grant lenity in this where it was an accident. I guess that goes to the actus reus. He didn't intend the act. So that is one small portion of innocent actors who would be protected, luckily, by the extremely rare circumstances there. But for this whole other group of people, who, again, honestly believe that the complaining witness there was consenting, this statute doesn't protect them because they did intend the act.
Can you, on rebuttal, can you explain, and I think this goes to the point that Judge Olson was making, can you explain why we shouldn't take account of the fact that B2 and B3 both use the words knows or reasonably should know and B1 does not?
Yes, Your Honor. Any questions?
Counsel for the government.
Chief Judge Stuckey, members of the court, may it please the court. I am Captain Sandra Ahinga, and along with Lieutenant Colonel Wayne Williams, I represent the government. Government asked this court to find that Article 120, Bravo 1, Bravo, is a general intent crime, and that imputing an mens rea of recklessness is not necessary to separate innocent from wrongful conduct. Two unambiguous signposts direct us to this finding. First, the text and statute, the structure of the statute, and second, the evolution of the statute reflected in its legislative history that Your Honor points out, which illuminates Congress' intent in this regard. We understand from the Supreme Court of the United States versus Staples and the United States versus Carter that Congress's intent may be both expressed and implied. Here, our canons of construction dictate that statutes must be read as a whole and it within the context of the UCMJ as a whole. It does not stand alone. Looking solely to Bravo 1 Bravo is too narrow and ignores the statutory scheme and its evolution. When we look at Article 120, Bravo 1, Bravo, we understand it to be a general intent crime, and as Your Honor points out, tracks logically in its function with Article 128 in the sense that the government may put forward evidence that a person was touched, that they did not consent to that touching, making it an offensive touching, and the elements of the offense have been established. If some evidence is presented by the accused that an affirmative defense, mistake of fact, or just some sort of justification, accident or self-defense in the 128 realm is presented, then certainly that instruction is given. And that is where we judge the appellant's state of mind by that objective standard of reasonableness or negligence that appears in the mistake of fact as to consent realm. So, when we're looking at Article 120, Bravo 1, Bravo, it cannot be said that the statute itself, 120, is silent. To address Your Honor's point about Bravo 2 and Bravo 3 having the newer reasonably should have known language in there, at one point, I believe it was the 2008 or 2012 version of Article 120, all three of the Bravo offenses fell under aggravated sexual assault, and all three were treated with the same objective standard of reasonableness as a mistake of fact as to consent. And at one point, after United States versus Neal and United States versus Prather, the Congress responded to this court's precedent and moved new or reasonably should have known language into that, into Bravo 2 and into Bravo 3. It did not have to in Bravo 1 because United States versus Neal did not say that the same infirmity in terms of the logical impossibility or legal impossibility of disproving an essential element was present in the Bravo 1, Bravo realm. So that language does not appear there. All of that being said, the more reasonable inference to take is that Congress intended for 120 Bravo to be a general intent crime and to treat all three of the offenses with the new or reasonably should have known language available in the mistake of fact as to consent affirmative defense. Here as well, imputing a mens rea of recklessness is certainly not necessary to separate innocent from wrongful conduct. A non-consensual sexual act, which is the actus reus in this case, is wrongful. And it is difficult, if not impossible, to imagine a situation where a non-consensual sexual act is per se lawful without result to an affirmative defense. And that's sort of the elegance of Bravo 1 Bravo, is what our legal minds already do in terms of thinking about the elements of the offense and thinking about the affirmative defense. That is how that happens in Article 120. Bravo 1, Bravo realm. And this court most recently, United States versus Forbes, citing to United States versus Jacobs, and eventually to United States versus Greaves, understands or notes that consent is that point upon which wrongfulness can turn, turning a touching from innocent to offensive.
Captain Ahinga, what do you make of the argument by appellant that these affirmative defenses are something that are created by the executive, and Congress then did not have any say in that. And so we cannot say that general intent was implied in this statute.
Yes, Your Honor, and I think we have to go back, to answer Your Honor's question directly, we have to go back and understand Article 120 as a whole, which includes Article 120 Fox, which is a provision that appears, a type of provision that appears nowhere else in the UCMJ, and that is our signpost, our road sign from Congress to say the affirmative defenses are available. We are aware of them. We understand how those two provisions play, and we intend for them to be available to an accused in this context. So it is not that it hangs out there as an executive order. It is pulled in by Article 120 Fox by the intent of Congress. So it cannot be said that it is silent and was not considered by Congress in sort of creating the 120 Bravo 1 Bravo scheme. Ultimately, imputing in a mens rea of recklessness is not necessary because a non-consensual sexual act is wrongful, and doing so, imputing in recklessness, certainly sort of erodes our understanding of consent. Here, the elements of the offense are defined by the act of the accused. Consent is solely defined by the experience of a victim, and the mistake of fact as a defense, mistake of fact as to consent defense, is where we sort of judge the mens rea based on that standard.
Counsel, going back to what Judge Olson said, could you elaborate a little bit more on 120F? I mean, 120F says you can have affirmative defenses, but it doesn't specify which ones you have. I mean, would your position be the same if, for example, the President were to eliminate or qualify the mistake of fact defense such that it couldn't be used in a 120 case? I mean, because in that situation, wouldn't we be exactly where appellant says, is that we don't have anything that distinguishes criminal from non-criminal conduct in Article 120 itself? Are there any other instances of statutes that don't distinguish, that rely on affirmative defenses to distinguish criminal from non-criminal? Rule-based affirmative defenses.
Yes, Roger. So certainly the functional equivalent would be that Article 128, where the affirmative defenses of justification or accident or self-defense are available, which are RCM 916 defenses. But here, Article 120 Fox says all applicable defenses. And I think it's telling when Article 120 Fox comes into the statute in terms of its legislative history, in the sense that Article 120 Fox comes in as the mistake of fact as to consent, as the changes to aggravated sexual assault are made, as the mistake of fact as to consent defenses are taken out of 120 itself and sort of moved over into the 916 affirmative defenses, that's when it comes in. And again, it's that road sign that says, we understand that they're there, we're making them available, we intend for Bravo 1, Bravo 2 to be a general intent crime, and we're judging that mens rea as an affirmative defense and not necessarily in the actual elements of the offense.
But doesn't that just leave it up to the president as to whether the intent, you have to have an intent here? All right, you have to have the mens rea other than just general intent? Because, I mean, couldn't the president just modify 916 in the next go-round of the MCM?
Certainly could, Your Honor, but I think the logical next step would be for Congress, if they intended, and that's what we're seeing here, if they intended for those to be available and the president makes them unavailable in the RCMs, then certainly they can pull them back in and make that change. But what we have here is Congress recognizing that Article 120 is part of a whole, part of the entire UCMJ, and is making sure that all of the provisions play well together. And that's what Article 120 Fox does here.
Counsel, let me jump forward a bit. Let's assume for the sake of argument that general intent was a sufficient mens rea, that that's what was implied by Congress. Were the instructions provided by the military judge adequate to inform the panel about what they needed to do in terms of determining general intent on the part of appellant?
I believe they were, Your Honor. So the instructions given here were certainly about the actus reus, so establishing the general intent for the sexual act, the bodily harm being that non-consent piece in this Bravo 1, Bravo context. And certainly, as this court found in United States versus True, the instruction that was given in terms of giving the negligence standard for mistake of fact as to consent was an appropriate statement of the law and the appropriate standard applied to this context. So certainly the instructions given here were appropriate and not in error. Pending any further questions from this court should affirm the findings below from the ACCA.
Thank you, counsel. Does the appellant have rebuttal?
Your Honor, to answer your question regarding the principles of statutory construction, the three adjacent subsections of this statute identify specifically the mens rea required for an accused to be convicted under those offenses. There, Congress did that properly, and I don't take issue with it here. Had Congress intended this particular offense to also be a negligent standard, they could have done so by addressing it in the definition of consent or adding an additional paragraph within the statute identifying that any mistake that was unreasonable was enough to convict an appellant. But Congress did not do that.
Counsel, the government counsel just said that they did it in 120F. What's your response to that?
So 120F does not specifically cross-reference anything. It doesn't point any reasonable reader anywhere other than stating the truism that affirmative defenses exist. Congress could have written in a standard within the statute. They know how to write statutes, and they could have inserted that within the statute itself by deferring to the president. They have vested an authority in him that they don't have to basically fix their statute, to write a correct statute. The president could issue an executive order the day after Congress passes the statute, and it would totally change the dynamic of that statute. And so to assume that when Congress could have written it, they didn't. They just wrote this vague paragraph in 120F, which I would submit to this court means one thing only, and that is that this is not a strict liability offense. All it says is defenses apply. That's all that means. To somehow presume that Congress wanted to let the president do its work for it is an absurd read of what that paragraph could ever mean.
Well, simply saying that it's a general intent offense is not saying that.
But, Your Honor, where the hundreds of years of precedent And the
deeply 100 years of precedent held that rape was a general intent offense.
Right, and those rapes all required force by an accused. And so they properly distinguish between an innocent and a wrongful actor. I'm saying that for hundreds of years, the jurisprudence in this country has acknowledged that the mens rea of an accused is relevant.
Also, back in the old days when Article 120 was simple, force could be the mere act of penetration, right? The act of penetration, if there was no consent, was sufficient force. So you're wrong.
Captain Dre, earlier I didn't quite follow your response to Judge Olson's question about assault and battery. So it's still not clear to me how your position will either apply or not apply to the offense of assault and battery, where you also might have the defense of mistake of fact as to consent. You see what I'm asking you? In other words, you've made much about the issue of mistake of fact as to consent, but the same scenario could arise with a regular assault and battery, could it not? Or no, under your view?
I don't think so, Your Honor, because, again, where the element requires a forcible touching for an assault consummated by a battery, that properly distinguishes wrongful from innocent conduct. The affirmative defense there for a reasonable mistake of fact that someone wants it to be touched in a certain way protects someone after the government has properly met the requirement that it prove a mens rea in the first instance in its prima facie case, if that answers your question.
Maybe I'm confused, but it seems to me that you're writing into force and offensive touching a certain requirement for a degree of oomph, which isn't there.
I disagree, Your Honor, and I point to this
and would probably be incapable of being embodied in statutory language, but go ahead.
The use of force requires a panel or a fact finder to somehow put itself into the mind of the accused, that some type of excessive force, their requirement, that the government prove forces the panel to understand what an accused is doing, where this statute simply does not, where the consent of DJ is entirely subjective. I see that my time is up. Pending questions.
Thank you, counsel. Court thanks counsel for both sides. Case is now submitted, and the court will be in recess until 10:15.
Court stands adjourned.